September 17th, 2013. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. I'm coming to you from the suburbs of Chicago. I really appreciate you joining me today on RBN. Their website is republicbroadcasting.org. To see the guest lineup and relevant links for this program, please visit spingola.com. There you will see the list of all the people that I've ever had on the program since October 2010, and you will also see links to their website. Just visit the website and click on the radio schedule button. Please also visit spingolaspeaks.info, a site that one of our wonderful, very talented listeners created. Please don't forget that the American Free Press is currently having a huge book sale. You may access their books at AmericanFreePress.net. Be sure and order some. Today, we are not going to be able to take any comments via email because we don't have any electricity. I think the whole suburb is shut down, and the only thing that's working here at my house is my telephone. So if you want to join others in the chat room, you may do so by going to spingola.chatingo.com. Sorry that I will not be available to visit the chat room today. My guest today is Hans Krampe, that's K-R-A-M-P-E, and he's a fabulous, fabulous fella. He is the transcriber or the translator of Werewolves of the Iron Cross, Swastika and Scimitar, Brothers in Arms, and he writes a lot of articles that are published on various websites, including justiceforgermans.com. Hans, welcome to the program.
Hi, Deanna.
How are you today?
A charmer. You are such a charmer.
You're such a flirt. You are. I just get a real kick out of talking with you and getting emails from you. Anyway, you're a sweetheart. You recently wrote an article. Well, you write a lot of articles, but one of the ones that I recently read was in response to some Canadian up there writing some things that weren't very pleasant. I mean, they just really don't allow a lot of free speech in Canada. But so far they haven't troubled you too much, correct?
Well, you are free to say whatever you want, but it doesn't amount to anything because it kind of peters out in nowhere. Nobody listens to it and it has no consequences. But if you get too close to someone of importance or of influence, then you will be harassed, that's for sure.
Indeed.
Like Arthur Topham, for example.
Or Ernst.
Yeah, right. or Ernst Zündel and Kiekstra and all these people.
Right. And it's unfortunate that Canada has this censorship policy. I mean, it's really awful. They really haven't implemented it in England, and yet Canada has, and it's yet we think of Canada as being an English possession or an English, colony. But
Canada is completely, the Canadian media are completely controlled, if not outright owned, by Jews. Jews will determine what goes on the air, what is being printed in the papers, and who can be tolerated and who cannot. And they have their special agents on the prowl to ferret out anyone who has a potential to become inconvenient.
Right. So you have the same situation there that we do here. And I suppose the ADL is active up there also because it's Or do they have their own B'nai B'rith organization up there to censor people?
Well, you have the foremost organizations that deal with freedom of speech situations or the curtailment thereof are exclusively Jewish organizations like the B'nai B'rith and the ADL and the AJC, and their agents, their permanent agents and employees that go around and set people up to be eliminated from the internet are Richard Warman and what's the other fellow? I forgot his name now. That the ones that attacked Arthur Toppin, they go around and put phony, what they call anti-Semitic messages on Facebook or on the internet at large under a pseudonym, and then accuse the people that run the websites of containing anti-Semitic hate propaganda. So it's a blatant criminal setup. And the fact that the Canadian government and the RCMP are playing along with that kind of behavior tells you a lot, you know, about what politics in Canada are like.
Right. Apparently they're owned. That's a shame. Yes.
You have Southern News was bought by Conrad Black, who is a Jew. You have the National Post, which was a paper completely newly created by Conrad Black. And you have the CBC Radio TV organization that is probably, I mean, I can't prove it, I haven't investigated it, but judging by their programming, it's plain as day that they're Jewish-run and Jewish-organized. You've got the Globe and Mail, the flagship of Canadian newspapers, routinely publishing completely false and hate-mongering, anti-German hate-mongering articles. And so you have the entire population of Canada being, through the school system, through the educational system at large, set up before they even start to enter public life with hate for Germans. And
wow.
That I face every day. You know, the other day I was accosted by some, I went into a business to get a little job done, and the person there, all of a sudden, out of the blue, says, "Hey, Adolf Hitler was insane, wasn't he?" I said, "What?" He said, "He was insane, wasn't he?" I said, "No, he wasn't." And then he starts to lecture me on Second World War history, of which he had obviously hadn't the slightest, foggiest idea what it was all about and how it went. And he did know nothing about National Socialism or Adolf Hitler, and is there arrogantly telling me what I'm supposed to believe. When I contradicted him, he became abusive and practically threw me out of his shop. But he was sitting in a wheelchair, you know. If he hadn't sat in a wheelchair, he wouldn't have had the courage to say that to me, because then I would have smacked him one.
I believe you would have.
Really, I mean, that kind of nonsense. You know, I don't go to places that where I would previously meet friends. I don't go there anymore, because these friends turned all out to be just as brainwashed as that guy was.
Oh, really? I think that that's true for a lot of people. A lot of people that I've met on the internet have said, well, we just can't talk to our family. Oops, okay, we're going to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Deanna, our guest today is Hans Krampe. His name is spelled K-R-A-M-P-E. He writes a lot of articles, which Wayne at justiceforgermans.com often publishes, and they are also found elsewhere on the internet. And you were talking about, friends and family who just do not seem to get it. They disbelieve the government with so many other issues, and yet they accept without question the official version of World War II. And unfortunately, if one does not look at history, if one does not look at the history of warfare worldwide, if they don't look at that history, they will not be able to understand what is going on now, and they will continue to believe the official version. They'll believe the government's version of what's going on in Syria, or the media's version of what's going on in Syria and everywhere else. And it's just very deceptive. So anyway, it's difficult to deal with friends and family sometimes.
Understand how brainwashing works or mind control. They think, well, if I sit in front of the TV and I watch hockey, how can that possibly be brainwashing? Well, it's brain the sense while you are sitting watching hockey, you are being deprived of information that are vital to your survival and that you don't get. And then once the hockey game is over, you are watching trivia, you know, talk shows, sitcoms, etc., and you think you are being informed. Well, you aren't. You are misinformed, you are disinformed, you are kept deliberately in ignorance, and then you go voting. And who do you vote for? What the media are telling you. You know, and you have no other source of information other maybe the local newspaper who is just as compromised and corrupt as the television and news media. And so it's the brainwashing is executed in a way that is pleasant to you, that is entertaining, and it's sneaky. It doesn't come across as brainwashing, but the effect in the end is the same. You're ignorant. You're fast asleep at the wheel, so to speak, because you don't know where you're going and where you're coming from. And you make decisions that are totally inappropriate.
Right. Now, tell us a little bit about the media up there, the main CBC, which is state-financed. And you said before that it was totally controlled. And you used to watch it and view it as something that, you know, an avenue where you could get information from, but not recently, right?
Well, you know, I didn't watch so much CBC TV. I listened to the radio while I built my house. So every day the radio was on, and I would listen to Morningside in the morning, and I would listen to As It Happened in the evening. And it was the CBC radio financed by the government, ostensibly at arm's length to have created an alternative to privately owned broadcasters who would then broadcast completely pragmatic news.
Right.
Whereas the CBC was going to present you with real important news. Well, I must admit that the CBC staff and the talking heads, they were very talented, pleasant to listen to people. And at first, the choice of their topics were relevant and interesting regarding politics. But slowly, over a couple of years listening to this, I realized that there was a tendentiousness. Especially when I had the opportunity to check things out on the emerging internet. And then I recognized discrepancies of what they were saying and what actually happened as I could glean from various websites on the internet.
Thank goodness for the internet. It has been such a wonderful blessing for those of us who are speaking in the truth, and thank goodness for alternative radio.
Yeah, and here you have again propaganda at work, where it seems to be a common given that everything on the internet is bullshit. You know, well, how do you know that what you get on the internet is true and what is not true? And how can you? A friend of mine actually said to me, "How can you possibly imagine that what I see on TV is untrue? Do you think they really are telling me the lies?" And yeah. He said, you know, if you were in someone else's house and not mine, they would kick you out. They would beat you up and kick you out.
Well, people really believe everything that they read in every book. They believe what is on TV because it's an official vehicle. And I think the other thing is that people who don't ordinarily lie will just do not conceive of other people being that deceptive. So I think that we're very trusting. We've been brought up to be very trusting, particularly of authority. And so when the doctor says, oh, yes, you should take this flu shot, it's perfectly safe, people fall for it. When, in fact, the things that they tell us just are not true. And it's because of the profit motive in many instances.
Yeah, then imagine, what are you supposed to think of doctors in general if they are pushing vaccination and bald-faced statements, say to you with a straight face that, the effectiveness of vaccination has been proven for 100 years. Well, it hasn't. How are you then, you are not a doctor, how are you then contradict him and say, no, it hasn't been proven?
Right.
And he will just, super seriously raise his eyebrow and work at you. What an ignorant fool you are, and you walk out of there feeling like a fool,
Right. Well, I think we're all trained to have this herd mentality, and unfortunately many people just don't recognize it, that they are just going along with the crowd, and the crowd is going in the wrong direction.
Humans have been trained to have a herd mentality.
Right.
And today in Germany, the majority of Germans have not just developed a herd mentality, they are downright insane and not distinguish anymore between lies and slander and facts, because they are too lazy to even go and look at what the past happened in the past, really, now that the internet is there. They don't do it because they have grown comfortable of feeling guilty, and like you said, they believe what authorities tell them, and condemn anyone who contradicts their or disturbs their comfort zone.
Now, why do you suppose that is? Is that because of the 7-year denazification program, and because the media was taken over by the tribe? And because all of the school teachers and everybody that had any influence or positions of authority were taken out of those positions? Is that what has caused this?
No, the way okay,
we'll pick this up on the other side of the break. We will be back in about 4 minutes. Back. This is Deanna. Our guest today is Hans Krampe. That's K-R-A-M-P-E. He writes a lot of articles, many of which appear on justiceforgermans.com. Alrighty, as I mentioned before, I am without electricity. The only thing that's working in my house are the telephones and the atomic clock. Everything else is just shut down. I feel so isolated. Alrighty, we were talking about the current population in Germany, that they are just very ignorant, and I question whether that was because of the denazification program following World War II, And so go ahead and tell us what you feel is the cause of this situation.
You're right. It's the denazification program. Well, when Germany was defeated in 1945, the Americans, or the Allies, declared themselves to be the temporary, government, temporary authority over the defeated territory and the people. So from that point on, all media, all educational institutions, all publishing businesses, everything that was of relevance and influence could only operate if it was certified or by the occupying authorities. So you had to get if you wanted to run a newspaper, you had to get a certificate from the Allies. And the Allies, of course, they insisted with a fine-tooth comb, through the people that were available to or capable of running these kinds of organizations, picking out the ones that were useful to them, either voluntarily or by pressure. And that hasn't changed since then. Right from the outset, they created something that I had never heard about until a couple of years ago, and that was the Chancellor file. The Chancellor, the Kanzlerakte, the Chancellor of Germany is the most powerful decision maker in the country, like Angela Merkel today, like Helmut Kohl was before, or Konrad Adenauer right at the creation of the Federal Republic of Germany, Western Germany. They had, according to that file, they had to set their signature on the bottom, committing themselves to carry out nothing that or everything according to the Allied instructions. They were not serving the German people, they were serving the Allies. And so now you imagine, from that time on, there has been nothing but hate propaganda, falsification of the history, right from grade one in school and before. In the East German system, you had little kids in kindergarten being already instructed with false history. So by the time they come out of school, they know nothing else. They think they know the truth. So do the Germans today.
Now, would this also impose upon them an incredible guilt complex, being told how evil they were, how bad they were? And I think it's important to recognize, too, that this wasn't just about going after Hitler. This was going after the German population itself. And this was a goal, at least from 1848 forward. So this isn't just a Hitler thing. This was, let's destroy the German nation.
Well, actually, as you know, that started already much, much earlier.
Sure.
When Adolf Hitler started to create his own debt-free money, and when it became apparent, when the success and the benefits of that became globally apparent on such an amazing scale, where the entire world was, in a deep depression and couldn't get out of it, including the United States, where 7 million people starved to death, and God only knows how many people died in Canada at the same time. When Germany experienced, an amazing surge of prosperity and independence and freedom under Adolf Hitler, that has never been surpassed since then, even today. But with the exception of one nation I know of, and that was Libya. And Muammar Gaddafi has to be, He deserves the Nobel Peace Prize for what he did for Libya,
right,
and for Africa as a whole.
Right.
Because he went and had his own debt-free currency created, and they had a standard even higher than Germany's was. But then Gaddafi had the luxury of sitting on huge oil resources, and he could sell oil, which Germany didn't have at the time. Adolf Hitler managed to create all this prosperity and economic well-being of Germany amidst worldwide destitution without having any resources to speak of.
Right, right. And, of course, I think Iraq has done that. It did that also. And so I think it's important to indicate that the war was not because Germany went into Poland on September 1st, 1939. The actual reason that the Allies declared war was to get rid of the economic system, of Hitler's economic system, and it was to destroy that economic system, and it had nothing whatsoever to do with his action in Poland or his action in Czechoslovakia before that, or Austria.
Yeah, and because the German economic system was represented a fatal danger to the Jewish high finance and to the Jewish tradition of creating money out of thin air and charging interest. So the debt loaded credit and which created poverty and destitution all over the world. That was the major reason why Germany had to be destroyed. And on top of that, the German people were very gifted people, very industrious and diligent and inventive. And, you know, Churchill said long before the Second World War, he said, you know, if Germany, he said that after the First World War, if Germany rises again to economic prosperity and starts to produce again, we have fought this war in vain. Oh, within 50 years, he said, then we have fought this war in vain.
Right. And he also said that it was actually the First World War and the Second World War were really just one big war with a pause in between.
Churchill talks about the 30-year war, the second 30-year-old war.
Right.
But the period between the First World War and the Second World War was actually a form of siege, a form of war by other means. They were trying to kill Germany economically, and they had just about accomplished that when Hitler came to power in government and swung the whole thing around and sort of destroyed mainly British and French and American plans to destroy Germany.
Right. And it's important, too, I think, to note here that so many people say, well, the Rothschilds are the ones that funded Hitler. Well, they already had Germany in their pocket. The Weimar Republic, they had the lack of morality during that Weimar period. They had politicians in place. They would not have needed to finance a Hitler because he did just the exact opposite of what they would have wanted. He threw the bankers out. And so, go ahead.
Yeah, that is a complete fabrication. I mean, why would they finance someone when their plans went ahead already beautifully as they had figured them out? Germany was practically destroyed with huge reparations that would have required Germany, if they had honored this extortionate kind of reparation obligation.
Right.
Okay, they would have been paying for generations and never gotten out of it. It was not repayable.
Exactly.
So they had already a system in place to destroy Germany.
Okay, we do have to take a break, and we'll pick this up on the other side. Be right back in about 3 minutes. Hans Krampe, and he writes a lot of articles, and he's also the translator of the book Werewolves of the Iron Cross, Swastika and Scimitar, Brothers in Arms. And you mentioned the reparations that Germany was scheduled to pay, and this occurred right after World War I. General Charles C. Dawes, a corrupt Illinois politician and banker with J.P. Morgan guidance, set up the Inter-Allied Reparations Commission and devised the Dawes Plan to collect war reparations from Germany. The commission was to report on how much Germany owed by May 1st, 1921, and what they decided, and this is equivalent to today's market, was that Germany owed $393.6 billion. And some of the members on this reparations commission included Herbert Hoover, who is a longtime Rothschild minion, General Tasker H. Bliss, W.S. Benson, Bernard Baruch, Henry M. Robinson, Thomas W. Lamont, Whitney H. Shepherdson, Norman H. Davis, Edward M. House, Gordon Auchincloss, and Vance McCormick. So we see that they already had, the bankers already had had a grasp on Germany, correct?
Well, you just mentioned Herbert Hoover. Well, I read James Buck's book Other Losses,
in which, oh yes,
in which he appraises Herbert Hoover's efforts in helping people to that nourishment which Eisenhower, while Eisenhower was starving them to death, he tried to get food supplies to the starving people of Europe.
Well, Herbert Hoover is a very interesting gentleman, or scoundrel, because in the First World War, Germany wanted to reach peace. They wanted to stop the war because they didn't have enough food to feed their population, and so they sued for peace several times. And Herbert Hoover came up with this this plan with one of his banker buddies that they would get food from the United States, whether by donation or whatever, and then they would sell it to Germany. And in this process, Herbert Hoover and his banker buddy made millions upon millions of dollars, because they, you know, they would get the food for free often, and then charge the Germans an exorbitant price for it.
Starving Germans.
And I think that that's and that is what kept Germany in the war. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been able to participate in the war. And so Hoover came up with this plan, and so he did have this reputation of being the big humanitarian, you know, humanitarian Hoover is going to feed the world. But when you read what he actually did here in this country, as far as telling people, oh, you've got to, you know, no meat, no wheat, no this, no that, and he's just a big phony. And so whatever Mr. Bach wrote about him in Other Losses, is true to, in part.
Well,
because I don't believe he changed his stripe.
When I read his book the second time, because the first time I read the book when I was still in the process of learning the truth about the Second World War and about Adolf Hitler and, you know, what happened in the Weimar Republic, I wasn't quite informed well enough.
Sure.
To really notice what he was writing there. But when I read it the second time, I noticed how that leaves no opportunity unused to malign Adolf Hitler and the Nazis.
Oh, absolutely.
And when I then realized how well he researched what happened after the war, did it never occur to him to check out why Eisenhower was doing these things? What actually happened before the war, and why the war was fought, and what the Weimar Republic was all about, and what happened there. For example, how the period of inflation came about, and The same occurred when I read Alfred de Zayas' book about the war crimes, the German war crimes.
Nemesis at Potsdam?
No, he wrote a book about the German war crimes bureau and the,
the
judges that traveled around and investigated war crimes.
Right, yeah.
To record Allied war crimes.
Oh, right.
And Zayas does the same thing. He maligns the Germans and Hitler like there is no tomorrow. And to me it means he really doesn't know anything about the period between the Second World War and World War. He doesn't know what happened there.
Right. And one must know and study World War One in order to figure this out. And, of course, the Germans were targeted long before World War One by England, by the people who run England.
Well, you know, the English had already announced they wanted to destroy Germany and the German people at the end of the 1800s.
Sure.
They had been working towards this systematically. You know, they wanted the First World War. In fact, they set it up, like, for example, the assassination of Prince Ferdinand was probably a Jewish-organized underground assassination where they paid this, what was his name?
The guy that killed Archduke, what was his name? Prisip? Princip?
He was, his name, last name was Princip, but I forgot his first name.
Yeah, I'll have to look it up here.
And he was probably set up and organized and paid for by LICRA, or LICA.
Yeah.
Which was a Jewish organization headquartered in Paris.
Right.
And obviously that was set up to ignite a powder keg, which was the Balkans, which had ambitions to expand their territory, and to they had a hostile relationship towards the Austro-Hungarian monarchy, and it was a setup where Germany would be drawn into the First World War because Germany was allied with the Austro-Hungarian monarchy in a friendship pact. So when Austria declared war on Sarajevo, it wasn't Yugoslavia then, it was
the Austria-Hungarian, it was Gavrilo Princip and Nedzeb.
Gavrilo, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, the area where Sarajevo is situated was
part of the Austro-Hungarian throne.
Oh, no. No, it wasn't. It was a Balkan state. I forgot its name now.
Okay.
I should know because I have been there. I just can't remember.
But wasn't that part of the Austro-Hungarian area before they broke it all up?
No. No, the Austrian-Hungarian Empire extended further north and further east. You know,
it
included Hungary and it included Slovakia and etc.
But wasn't Franz Ferdinand the heir apparent to that to the Austro-Hungarian throne?
Yes,
and
he was.
Yeah, that's why they did him in.
Anyway, simply to the fact that Germany was allied with Austria. Compelled them into the First World War, and you know they didn't need the First World War at all, and so it was the result of Britain and France forming the.
Alrighty, we are going to our top of the hour break. We will be back at 6 minutes after the hour. Stay tuned and we'll pick this up on the other side of the break. Welcome back. This is Deanna. And our guest today is Hans Krumpe. He writes a lot of articles for several websites, including justiceforgermans.com. Sorry, I was running up and down the stairs here. The electricity's back on, but everything isn't quite set up up in my office to do the program up there yet. Maybe we can transfer during the next break. Anyway, Hans, we were talking about several things. I'm talking about the reparations and the situation in Germany after World War I, the horrible financial situation. It was pretty bad. And you were also mentioning DeZayas' book, three of which I have. I guess I've only done three, I'm not sure. Nemesis at Potsdam and A Terrible Revenge. But he doesn't quite go into some of the real history. And so he misses
the point. You know how it is sometimes. It probably happens to you, too, when you don't remember data when you need them. And then when everything is over and it's too late to remember, then they come to you all over the place.
Sure.
That just happened to me after when the break started. You know, state that Sarajevo was in at the time was called Herzegovina, and it was part of a whole bunch of other states like Kosovo, Montenegro, Croatia, etc. And they were loosely associated, you wouldn't call it a federation, but they weren't yet Yugoslavia. I was in error. It wasn't Lycra. Lycra was created somewhere between the First and the Second World War, I think.
Right.
The secret organization that Gavrilo Princip was being led by was called the Black Hand.
Right.
And it goes to show you that there were underground secret machinations underway to initiate the First World War.
Right, and they had to kill people in order to do that.
Yeah.
And
they had to have a patsy.
Sure.
What was the other one we were talking about? Oh, yeah, DeZayas. Oh, yeah. We got kind of off the track. We were talking about the media in Canada and how the CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, was an alternative to private American broadcasting. And I remember having listened to years back program somewhere where the CBC had a program called This Week, This Hour Has 7 Days, something like that, and the reporting in it was, for the Canadian government, a tad too close to the bone. It became really, it was a program that was doing what it was supposed to do. It was snuffed. It was canceled. And never allowed to broadcast again. And from that time on, the CBC became a corrupt organization, I think.
Right.
Anyway, we are talking about the prevailing attitude amongst Canadians towards Adolf Hitler and National Socialist Germany. And in an article I wrote, it wasn't really an article, it was a letter of response to an article that a person by the name of Robin Matthews routinely publishes on the Vive le Canada website. And since Arthur Topham knows Robin Matthews personally, and I knew from Arthur Topham a bit about Robin Matthews, I was interested in what he was writing about that website. He was, in just about the article he wrote, never failed the opportunity to run down Adolf Hitler and the Nazis. And it occurred to me, by the style of his writing, that he was, he probably must have been a Marxist, because he likes the socialist, but he doesn't
We're experiencing some static here. I'm not sure why. Are you there? Are we having some EH going on here?
Is that?
Okay, I heard him. Hans, are you there?
No.
Okay, we're having a little bit of static. I don't know why. But you were talking about this gentleman who writes for the CBC website and never lets an opportunity go by without exploiting it and putting in some propaganda, negative black propaganda, right?
This has increased during the last 10 years.
Why do you think that is? Seriously?
Because due to the internet, there's a exploding awareness of what really happened. So the Jews are counteracting, and putting a lot of false information on their MSM, their mainstream media net,
to reach
the already brainwashed public and reinforce the false
Right. Now, do you think that the Ernst Zundel trial up in Canada, the two trials, had a lot to do with the awareness that we are now seeing on the internet? Do you think that was instrumental?
An incredibly pioneering job, And look,
Okay, we are having some difficulty here. I'm not sure. It's EH, electronic harassment. They still want Hans to be talking here and telling what he knows about the situation up in Canada. And we certainly do know that Canada does have a severe censorship policy wherein people just are not allowed to talk, as Hans said before, yes, you can say what you want, but if you get too popular or if people are listening too hard to what you're saying, then they're going to take you out. They will either send the Mossad in, as they probably did with Splitting the Sky, or they will arrest you and confiscate all of your information, your computer, and whatnot, like they did with Arthur Topham. Or if it's real bad, they're just going to put you in jail, take you to two trials, and then deport you back to Germany.
And I would say it's not even beyond them to let you disappear without a trial.
Exactly. People have disappeared.
Far it has come these days. That happens to many people in the United States right now, every year. And in Germany, you have something like 17,000 people annually in jail for having the wrong opinions of curious about the truth in the 20s, 30s, and 40s.
People have got to ask questions, because if you're put in jail, particularly like you mentioned in Germany, if 17,000 people are in jail each year because they ask questions, something's wrong here.
Oh, sure. I mean, government, the vassal government of the Allies, extends its power now over a German area of only 60% of Germany.
Exactly. All righty, Hans, we do have to take a real quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Our guest today is Hans Krampe, and he writes a lot of articles, and he writes a lot of letters, and he does write for justicegermans.com, at least Wayne put those articles up, and some of the other things that Hans does, including he also translates, because he is a German speaker and has translated the book Werewolves of the Iron Cross, Swastika and Scimitar Brothers in Arms. All righty, welcome back. I'm still on a telephone, so maybe at the next break we can I can switch to Skype and then we can take some phone calls.
I don't do Skype anymore. It's too expensive for me. Because I'm on wireless and I got only so many so much bandwidth.
Oh, okay.
And I pay through the nose.
Okay.
So I really miss it because usually after the show we keep talking on Skype, you know, and I can't do that anymore.
Sure. Yeah, Skype is great. It's wonderful.
So now coming to the case of Robin Matthews. Robin Matthews was teaching at Simon Fraser University in Vancouver, B.C. And so he is a man that a lot of students listen to and a lot of people may be listening to. And when he then writes a critical argument about Stephen Harper, the current Prime Minister of Canada, who is obviously a subversive figure that has been manipulated in position in Canadian politics, who now who pronounced that the prime purpose of Canada is to support Israel, knowing what Israel, the way Israel is behaving, and you know, he never misses a photo opportunity with a whole bunch of Jews, Lubavitchers and rabbis, and in that traditional ugly kind of attire, and being the friends, you know, having the menorah in front of him with the seven arms, making sure that everybody knows he is with the Jews, kind of.
Wow. Well, I think that's true for a lot of U.S. politicians also.
Oh, yes.
And they've even written a letter when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State. They wrote a letter to her saying that they were totally owed their allegiance to Israel and wanted her to respect that they were in favor of the Israeli state. And pretty awful. In fact,
you see, Christmas is coming up. And what do you see on the lawn of the White House? Not a Christmas tree or the Christian cross. You see a Jewish menorah, a huge one. The same you have in Germany. In the city of Berlin, they have now outlawed any religious celebration in public. So in Germany, you cannot have Christmas trees in the city of Berlin, I mean. You cannot have Christmas trees anymore or any Christian symbols displayed, nothing. But that also applies to Muslim expressions of religious expressions and others, except, of course, Jewish. There are Jewish symbols all over Berlin. They have an area two times the size of a soccer field with concrete blocks display, you know, ugly. They are concrete blocks covering an area of two football fields as a reminder of the Holocaust, which never happened.
Right.
Couldn't have happened because it is, according to natural law, physical impossibility.
Right.
And yet that is being displayed. The menorah, the Jewish star, everything, they can display anything they want because they are, the poor, poor victims, you know, who have been done so much injustice and cruelty to.
Sure. But nobody ever talks about the number of other people that perished during World War II. There were millions upon millions.
Just alone the Germans and the Russians. That come on their accounts. You know, the Russians, 60 million, well, according to Solzhenitsyn, over 60 million Russians have been killed.
Exactly.
Mainly NKVD and the Jewish commissars, or under Jewish commissars, if they weren't involved in hands-on activities themselves. You know, they like to torture and to bleed people to death, you know, as you can see. today.
Right, and of course, you know, you brought up reparations before, and that's reparations that Germany has to pay to Israel, the Israeli state. But there's also reparations to people that who consider themselves as survivors of Holocaust survivors, and they get reparations, and you can qualify as a Holocaust survivor even if you left the country, any country that Germany would occupy. But if you left that country before the occupation or left the country right after Hitler became chancellor, then you qualify as a Holocaust survivor and can collect reparations when you didn't even experience any warfare. I mean, it's just amazing how they've written these laws.
In 1979, the German Ministry of Finance published the statistic in which they detailed that they were paying reparations to over, I think, 5.3 million Holocaust survivors. 5.3 million. This is in 1979. That is 30 years after the fact. There are over 5 million Holocaust survivors. How can that happen? I mean, most of the so-called Holocaust victims or survivors were in 1945 in their 30s, 40s. By 1979, they were all dead. How can they have been, if there were any survivors, and supposedly, how can they have been over 5 million survivors and then paying reparations to them? And now they are even being ready to pay reparations to their offspring for the trauma that they suffered from, the trauma of their parents and grandparents.
Exactly. And if there's so many survivors, who exactly?
And then their kids will also be affected by the trauma of the offspring of the trauma.
Amazing.
You know, this, anybody who wants money now, all you have to do is say you are a Holocaust survivor, having lived in Germany and having to have escaped from there, and bang, you get, a generous monthly pension.
Amazing. And if there's so many survivors, well, who exactly did the Germans exterminate? If there's so many survivors, there were only probably, 15 million? According to Jewish sources, there were only about 15 million at the beginning of the war, and after the war, there were more. So,
in 1950 or so, 1949, 1950, according to the census of the World Churches or something, they did a census, and there were even more Jews than before the Second World War.
How could they have regenerated
within 5 years to that kind of number?
What is it that saying, figures lie and liars figure? All righty, we will be back in about 4 minutes after a word from our sponsors. Stay tuned.
Anyway, our guest today is Hans Krampe, and we were talking about the situation in Canada, the situation pretty much all over, and we were talking about the Holocaust survivors and how they can qualify to get easy money. And so, given this situation, all of this just provides evidence for the fact that they certainly did not fund Hitler, because he stopped all this. He threw the bankers out. He stopped the reparations payments. Did all kinds of things. Made them independent of the bankers. Okay, Hans, welcome back, and we will take some calls. at 800-313-9443.
Yeah. Well, Adolf Hitler put a stop to the influence of the Jews. I mean, well, as you probably have already mentioned a number of times on your programs, he retired them from influential positions with pay, from out of educational institutions, out of government positions, out of the police force, you know, anything that had influence in out of the media. And here we come to the point of the media and as it pertains to freedom of speech. The media should have freedom of speech, untrammeled freedom of speech, that's for sure. But the ownership of the media should not be freely available to anyone on the earth. And Hitler made sure of that. He introduced the stipulation that only Germans could own a medium and could be in influential positions. You had to be a member of the German state. You had to be a, you know, a German-born person. And that meant that a lot of Jews who had been infiltrating all these influential positions and doing their subversive activities there were now cranky that they were being taken the loot out of their hands, so to speak. And they haven't forgiven Hitler and Germany for that ever since.
All right. And so he's become the poster boy for every other person that they wish to vilify. They always claim, he's just like Hitler. Oh, Saddam Hussein, he's just like Hitler. Oh, Gaddafi, he's just another Hitler.
You see, he has become the whipping boy for every disaster on earth and rain in China.
Yes, indeed. How true. How true. And you also mentioned that that this story has become so institutionalized because we now have Holocaust education in all the schools here in this country, and I'm sure it's probably the same up there. And, of course, the official United States Holocaust Memorial Museum, which taxpayers pay at about $40 million a year. And so the taxpayers are actually paying for their own indoctrination, and we don't have museums for other groups of people who have been decimated by warfare or any other thing. So this institutionalization, because they do have the money to do this, is pretty well embedded into the system. How about up there?
The temerity of this brainwashing and the way it then calcifies in the brains of Canadians here. It never ceases to floor me how Canadians can be so ignorant to actually believe that they can teach me something about Germany. Most of them have never been in the country. They don't speak the language. They have never talked to anyone who was there at the time I was. But they presume to need to lecture me on my own history, and yet they don't even know their own history. You know, that's another thing that I accused Robin Matthew of, that he doesn't know the history of his own country. And he is now a retired professor, having taught for God knows how many decades at university. You know, he should know, but he doesn't, or at least he pretends not to.
Well, I think that that is a kind of the function of the teacher schools, and particularly now that you have something like Common Core here in this country and in other countries, that there is an institutionalized agenda that they are teaching, and you can't deviate from that. And so when the teachers are taught what is true, and when you have tax-free, tax-exempt foundations that pay teachers and professors to write books falsifying history, they do it for the money. And there certainly has been a lot of professors, current professors here in this country, who have written books that absolutely deliberately falsify history and certain events in history. It's what they get paid to do.
I personally know a teacher who has studied political sciences and knows what to think about the version of the victors, and yet he goes around and teaches the false history in school with no qualms whatsoever. He goes in holidays, on weekends he has parties and enjoying himself. There is not a twinge of conscience that would give him second thoughts of what he is doing to trusting children. I don't understand how he can put this in context with himself and sleep at night well.
Well, it depends on how they view people. People, like a schizophrenic person or a psychopathic person, I should say, because they have no conscience and because they don't see other people as having any value, then it's perfectly fine for them to do whatever it is they want to do to others, because they consider them less than animals. They consider that other people do not have souls. Or, as I said, any value. So it's pretty easy for them to justify doing awful things.
Well, you have to be a very, very shallow person, very egoistical,
Right.
If you're a pathological extent and you are probably unaware of your own affliction.
Yes, I've wondered that. I've wondered that myself. And we all have perceptions based on what we've been taught as we are growing up. And so, a person's worldview is a culmination of their experiences and what they've been taught to believe. And if they've, it's just like, other people, such as the Canadians or the Germans who were denazified. They were taught to believe a particular thing. And I'm sure that there are many Jews who simply would not even consider searching an opposing view other than their own, because that's just not what people do. People believe that they have the right idea and that their views are accurate and that they're right about things. And so it's a lack of humility that we do not seek other people's opinions or the opposite side, because
there's no natural curiosity to find out, and there's a certain emotional readiness.
Sure.
Absorb lies and slander about other people and other nations.
Correct.
When I came to Canada, I thought, this is my new country, and I'm going to integrate myself in it. I'm going to do the best I can to make a good living for myself responsibly. And from birth on, I have loved nature. I'm close to nature. I don't like industry around me. And yet, over the years now, having become familiar with Canadian attitudes, I have realized that I'm living on enemy territory. I don't feel at home here. I also realized that I will never be able to become anything other than a German. And even though I live here, I have realized too late that I'm living on enemy territory. Otherwise, I would have returned to Germany a long time ago.
But do you feel that it would have been different there with the programming of the younger German generation there? Do you feel like you would have been better off or not? Because when you think about the situation, it's probably very similar as the one in Canada.
Well, if I had access to the internet there, I would have probably thought the same way.
Sure. Alrighty, we are going to a quick 3-minute break. We will be right back and we'll take your phone calls at 800-313-9443. And our guest today is Hans Krompa. He writes articles and is very active in educating people up in Canada. And Wayne from Canada posts his articles and letters and anything else that that Hans comes up with. And somebody in the chat room was asking, and you kind of implied or suggested the way that you as a German are treated in Canada. And now yesterday Wayne was talking about his experiences, and he was born in Canada after his parents emigrated from Germany. Now you were born in Germany. You've been there, and so your experience is probably different, although you've had negative experiences as a Canadian, and you kind of implied that before we went to the break.
Well, I have to qualify a statement I just made in the last segment, and that is, it's not that I don't like industry, because I'm trained in an industrial profession, but I don't like the way industry is being run in North America, and that's why I don't like to be anywhere near it. For example, one of the huge tar sands oil production operations in northern Alberta. It is so huge, it almost tracks the entire width of today's Germany. It spreads toxins in the environment where the wildlife is just covered with cancerous tumors that roams around there and die of cancer, agonizing death. Nobody gives a damn. Stephen Harper doesn't even know about it. You know, and the government of Alberta is so in the pockets of the oil industry, they don't give a damn either. And yet there are technologies emerging and have already emerged that make the widespread need for oil totally redundant. There are already workable free energy devices on the waiting in the wings to be developed and put on the market, but they aren't, because the oil industry suppresses them.
Right.
But yet, what was your question about my relation towards Canada and Canadian?
Well, the fact you mentioned the story about you went into a retail store to purchase something, and the clerk, who was in a wheelchair, was making negative remarks. But Wayne was talking yesterday about his relationship with teachers and at school, and how the kids kind of picked on him and bullied him because he was, they called him a Nazi and everything. And has that been your experience in Canada also, even though you immigrated from Germany instead of being born there?
I haven't been called to my face of being a Nazi, and when I arrived in Canada, I actually believed still in all the nonsense, you know, that I'm now trying to argue against, because I was brainwashed, just as the Canadians are brainwashed. But at least I became aware of my brainwashing, and the Canadians do not. And they don't want to become aware of it because they're comfortable to have someone they can pick on. You know, it seems to be some kind of a perverse pleasure they experience when they can call someone a Nazi or run down Germany. You know, it's a
perverse. Well, right, yeah. I think when people do that, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. When people do that, I think that they're elevating themselves by denigrating others. We do have a caller, somebody from Canada. Why don't we go ahead and take Craig in Ontario. Craig, welcome. Oh, he dropped. Okay. Alrighty, too bad. Well, if Craig's listening, please feel free to call back. So, do you feel that might be an issue, that people denigrate others because they want to elevate themselves?
No. It's more like when the conversation turns towards the issue of money and war, and you make an argument that they don't like, even though you haven't even mentioned Hitler or the National Socialists or anything, then there is an emotional reaction. They will turn around and sneer at you. Yeah, what about Hitler? You know, and then you say, well, What about him? What do you know about him? Yeah, he did this and that and that. And then when you try to... And then I have learned there's no use trying to now telling them some facts about Hitler, because their minds are boxed in closed. They are not receptive to any rational, common sense argument. They just want to spew out that something that sits in their mind, just waiting to be voiced. And I just can't make heads or tails on it.
Maybe that's the whole point. I mean, if you focus hatred and really negative feelings on one person or one issue, then people just don't open their minds to anything positive. They don't know anything about the economic situation during those years when he threw out the bankers. And so that's the whole point, probably, is that they want all the focus of the hatred on one person, and then they won't investigate anything else because they have all the answers.
One of the purposes of brainwashing is to cut down common sense and reason, and to make things establish the condition in the person that is totally emotional. Beyond reason, beyond facts, beyond argumentation and common sense, and to react emotionally, and then impose a propaganda of hatred. If you want to attack someone, like for example, let's take Libya. Preceding the attacks on Libya have been decades of vilification of Muammar Gaddafi and Libya. And they were complete lies. Yet the public believed it, and the public gobbled it up because there was nothing else in their environment to compare with in terms of information. And now they were ready at the drop of a hat to go over there and kill Gaddafi, that murderer of tens of thousands of his own people.
Well, what about Syria now? Isn't it the same thing?
Syria is Libya too. The same difference. You know, they did the same thing. You know, vilifying Bashar al-Assad, calling him a tyrant and a murderer of his own people, and he guards his own people, and all of that is complete nonsense. It never happened. But yet, since it's in the mainstream media and the general American public and Canadian public, for that matter, get their information from the mainstream, they believe it because, like you said, they can't believe that these media will lie to them. And they react emotionally. Hey, yeah, let's go. And that Gaddafi, that Assad, he has to be eliminated. He is a menace to humanity. Well, they don't know nothing about... They knew nothing about Gaddafi, and they don't know anything about Assad. You know, but they believe what the mainstream media tell them. So freedom of speech in the mainstream media, I have a problem with that. And I would agree with Adolf Hitler, who cut freedom of speech to the extent that any medium that would spread a lie and hate propaganda about Germany, inside Germany, would be shut down. And rightfully so, you know. You don't tolerate organizations that destroy yourself and your own country.
Right, but that was the whole point of what the Allies were trying to do, was to destroy the country, and they certainly had a lot of infiltration into Germany
Slowly, the Germans are becoming strangers in their own country. They are flooding Germany now to the tune of hundreds of thousands annually with the riffraff of the third world that no other country would tolerate inside their borders. They are flooding them into Germany and then giving them preferential treatment that Germans don't enjoy. You know, housing, free furniture, a car, monthly allowance, etc.
Oh, dear. What a shame. Well, thank you so much, Hans. We've run out of time. Thank you so very much for being on the program today. You're just delightful. Thank you.
Diana, send me your phone number.
Okay, I will do that. I'll email it to you.
Love
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye, listeners. Talk with you tomorrow.